Continuing in mitzvah, Shin Lamed Zayin 337, we're talking about things that are not relevant to the prohibition of anah. So if you overcharge or underpay for them, then the transaction would not be nullified, and perhaps it might be permissible to overcharge or underpay for them, even from the outset, different opinions on this matter. Mikan Amra Mocher Shtarosav Labbasam, somebody who sells their documents to a perfumer, yesh lahem onah. So there it would have onah because v'atam l'fi she'ein mochrin lo l'rayishem ela l'shtamesh b'niyar. So perfume makers need paper scraps in order to bundle their packages of besamim, of fragrances. So therefore, the assumption is when you sell to a person who needs the actual paper, even if this was originally a document, it's not a blank sheet of paper, but rather a document with writing on it, if you sell the document to a perfume maker, then the principles of ona'a apply because they have in mind the physical paper. Become masmale by Gemara, my kamash malan, kilomar pshita. So that's why is this Gemara even see fit to tell you the specific case of selling your documents to a perfume maker? Because what do you mean? Obviously, if you sell an actual paper, so why is it different from anything else? It's a shtar. We understand. He has to tell you the chiddush that since you're selling it for the debt, so it's not relevant to ona. V'chimigra gara niyar mikol sharmile. Paper is worse than anything else if you overcharge or underpay for it, so that the rules wouldn't apply. Umishane, what is the Gemara answer? La puke midrav kahana damar ein ona leprutos. Gemara is telling us that we don't paskin like the opinion of Rav Kahana, who holds that when there's a transaction that's a very minimal amount of money, talking pennies, so there's no ona. So he holds that if you remember, we're talking about overcharging or underpaying a sixth. So if you something is worth 6 pennies and you pay only 5 for it. So ordinarily, based on the principles, that would be an invalid transaction. But if we hold like Rav Kahana that ain't ona leprutos, so then the transaction would be valid because it's such a small amount of money that people are going to forgive the inconsistency with the price. Begdesho. So why is there no ona when it comes to holy things? So if you are makdish something, if you pledge something to the Beis Hamikdash, and then the gizbar, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, sells this object, is paying you for the object, then anything that has to do with hekdesh is not subject to ona, because God doesn't care about the prices. He's willing to pay extra or a little less. You know, we don't pinch our pennies when it comes to God. So it says, when it talks about the rules of Onah, it always says, your friend, which means another Jewish person. So God might be Jewish, but he's not a person. So therefore, it doesn't apply to God. When you're talking about Hekdesh, you're talking about sanctified property, there is no rule of Onah. And this halacha works very much in our favor in many instances. Because it's helpful when you're doing something like redeeming Maiser Sheni. So Maiser Sheni is when you're in Eretz Yisrael and you're tithing your produce. So Maiser Sheni is the tithe. You have to take a tenth of your produce and take it and eat it in Yerushalayim. But if there's a lot of produce and you don't want to take it all to eat in Yerushalayim, so you're allowed to redeem it. You take a coin and you say, the holiness of the Maiser Sheni, I want to be redeemed onto this coin. Then you take the coin to Yerushalayim, and you buy other foods there, and that you'll eat that with Kiddushas Maiser Sheni. So nowadays, Maiser Sheni, we can't eat Maiser Sheni, because you only eat Maiser Sheni in a time where there's a Mizbeach, when the altar is constructed. But you have a problem that even though you're not allowed to actually eat Maiser Sheni, you must tithe your produce if you live in Eretz Yisrael. And one of the things you have to separate is Maiser Sheni. So what are you going to do? You have all this Maiser Sheni, and not only can you not take it to Yerushalayim to eat even if you wanted to, you're now going to take a certain amount of money, and you're going to redeem your Maiser Sheni. So okay, the produce that you have is going to become chulin. It's going to become regular produce, and you're going to be allowed to eat it even outside of Yerushalayim. But let's say you're a farmer, and you have the largest carrot farm in Eretz Yisrael. So you grow... 100,000 pounds of carrots. Okay, you're 100,000 pounds of carrots. So your Maaser Sheni is going to be, not exactly this, because you have to take off the other, the Truma first, whatever, but it's going to be approximately 10,000 pounds of carrots. So 10,000 pounds of carrots are, okay, so you have it, and you want to redeem it on your coins, because you want to be able to use this, all your carrots, as much as you want. You say, okay, so these 10,000 pounds of carrots are going to be Maaser Sheni in my tithing procedure, and now you have to redeem it. So the 10,000 pounds of carrots are worth what? Thousands of dollars. 10,000. Okay, let's say a carrot is a dollar a pound, maybe a little, okay, whatever it is. Assuming a carrots are a dollar a pound, so these carrots are worth $10,000. So now you have to gather a lot of quarters or dollar coins or shekel coins, whatever it is.
Bitcoin.
No, it doesn't work. It has to be a physical. It has to be a physical coin with an imprint on it, and you have to gather a lot of quarters, and you have to redeem. You're gonna redeem your Maaser Sheni for these $10,000 worth of quarters, and then what are you gonna do with it? So the $10,000 worth of quarters that you have now that are absorbed with the holiness of Maaser Sheni, what are you gonna do with your with all these quarters? Yeah, nowadays you can't. In the times of the Beis Hamikdash. So you schlep your $10,000 of quarters to Yerushalayim, and you buy, let's say you're a carrot farmer, but you don't like carrots. You just find it to be a lucrative business. So you buy in Yerushalayim, you buy $10,000 worth of steak. What are you going to do now that you can't go to Maaser Sheni, you can't go to Yerushalayim and eat your Maaser Sheni? So all this money is basically going to go to waste. So you apply the principle of Ein Ona LaHekdesh. And how this helps you a lot, because what you do is you now say, all the Maaser Sheni, this $10,000 worth of Maaser Sheni that I have in my farm, I am going to mechalal, I'm going to redeem on a nickel. How does that work? You're essentially using a nickel to buy $10,000 worth of produce. How does that work? The answer is Ein Ona LaHekdesh. God doesn't is not makbid on the exact pricing. In times of when you do a Maaser Sheni, you're not really supposed to do this. I think it would work b'dieved, but you're not really supposed to do this because you're cheating yourself out of the enjoying the Maaser Sheni with holiness. But nowadays, you're not actually Maaser Sheni, so this works. So this is what's done all the time. So everybody says when they're Maasering, when they take out the Maaser Sheni, this section of the produce, this tenth, is going to be Maaser Sheni, and it's going to be redeemed on, you know, one pruta, in the coin that I've set aside for the redemption of Maaser Sheni.
What do you do with the nickel then?
You gotta throw it out.
Why does it have to be a coin? That's what I don't understand.
It has to be a coin. That's the din. It says "Vitzarto hakesef." You shall bind up the. Literally, the Torah it means you shall pack up the money. By this Chazal Darshan from this "Vitzarto hakesef," that is it has to be a. Currency that in which there is a tsura. It sounds vitzarta, sounds like vitzura. That has to be an image imprinted on the coin.
No, but currency, printed currency always has image imprinted.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Mm. Bitcoin doesn't, though.
But the idea is that since it's not an actual metal, so then, you know, the intrinsic value of a dollar bill is worth the same as a $100 bill. The only difference in price is based on the imprinted money. So it's sent, in essence, a dollar bill is basically has the din of a shtar, of a document rather than actual money. So therefore, you can't use it to redeem Maaser Sheni. I believe there is a minority opinion that you can. Again, that's very much not accepted. And we insist on actual coins.
Probably the reason why a coin is what's required is because at that time the money was in fact minted on metals that had intrinsic value, not just the nominal value.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
But, we can apply the principles by saying even though that nowadays we have bills, nevertheless, you know, it's analogous to a shtar. It's not against a document and not to a coin.
Yeah, it's going to change very soon because soon we're not going to use money at all.
Oh, that would be one. That's one thing I'm hoping in my lifetime. In my lifetime, I would like to see the end of all physical money. But
they did have shtar,
right?
At that time, it's going.
So what are we going to do for Maaser Sheni?
And shtar. I mean, that the same dichotomy existed.
It's going to be electronic, all of it's going to be electronic.
Well, we'll have to print some coins in order to be able to redeem Maaser Sheni.
Yeah,
yes. Well, if you don't have the opportunity, then they, you know, you don't have. For now, you know, hopefully this will, you know, the Beis Hamikdash will be rebuilt before the time where there's no more paper money or physical money at all. So in that time, so maybe either they'll mint the Israeli government. But I mean, I use Israeli loosely because by when the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt, presumably it'll be a different system of government. But the Jewish government in Eretz Israel will print its own special coins specifically for the redemption of Ma'aser Sheni, or you'll truck your 10,000 pounds of carrots to Yerushalayim and you'll eat them as Ma'aser Sheni. Okay.
Make a preserve.
Yeah, you can can them. Yeah. Okay. V'teida says the Sefer Chinuch shekol inyanei ha'una nemru b'shivui ha'chifetz. Fine. This is talking about the whole principle of onah is that the price is wrong. That's when the transaction is nullified. If it's more than a sixth, then it's okay. If it's less than a sixth, and it's exactly a sixth, then you give back just the difference from the correct price. Aval ha'ma'ane b'midaso shel chayfetz be'orko v'rachbo be'ovio mishkalo afilu b'dovar mu'at chozer. But if the mistake in the transaction is not the price, but rather the dimensions of the object were misrepresented, then that automatically nullifies the transaction, no matter how much actual money we're talking about. It's a principle in halacha. It's called mekach tos. Also, that when there's something that when there the a sale was done under false pretenses, then the sale is nullified. So here, even if it wasn't explicitly in Mekach Toz, not even if it was explicitly misrepresented, but it was just understood and determined by the Bezdin to say that it was the assumption was misunderstood, then the sale would be nullified. And certainly if you actively misrepresent the characteristics of the actual object, so that would be chozer, that would nullify the sale. Hainu d'amar Rava b'Gemara, and that would apply also to land. Remember, we said before that land is not subject to onah, because people are willing to pay extra for land. So, but if you misrepresented the land, then that would nullify the purchase. If you say, well, I have a piece of land that's 3 acres, and it was really only 2 acres, then that would nullify the sale. Hainu dama Rava ba Gemara, that's what Rava says in the Gemara, kol davar sheba mida v'sheba mishkal v'sheba minyan, anything regarding the dimensions of the object, afilu pachos mikadei onah chozer, even if the difference between what was represented to you and what you got was less than a sixth in price, nevertheless, that nullifies the sale. V'harotza lihinotzel mikol chashash inyanim elu shekasavnu. So onah sounds like it could be really annoying, because you know, you do a sale, and then you research it, and you realize that you paid the wrong price, and you have to go through the whole hassle of returning it. So how can we get out of the din of onah entirely? Yochol lomar lelokeach, the seller can say to the buyer, Chefet zeh she'ani mocher loch, yodei ani sheyesh ba'onah, ad kedei kach v'chach. This object that I'm selling you, I know that this is the range of onah for this object. I'm selling to you with a condition. I'm being very upfront with you. I'm selling you this object on condition that you cannot return it because of onah. So we know the kol tnai shebemamon kayim, the din of onah, is based on the idea that we assume that either the seller or the purchaser, whoever is being cheated, would not tolerate this thing. It's, you know, it was declare it to be a formal rule by Chazal with these shiurim, but it's based fundamentally on the idea that this is something, it depends on what people would forgive or not forgive. So if you buy something on condition that there's no onah, so obviously you're forgiving it, no returns, right? So then that would save you from all these issues of onah.
I haven't seen any signs like that up in any, you know, from, you know, foreign shops, or you know, I don't recall that. You know,
well, when buys used cars, that's
so you have
the
law
of the land that you buy as is. Meaning, if you buy, if the car could have damage and whatever, you can never return it if you buy a used car.
Well, returning something because there's damage is different from
well,
a per se.
You could say it's like misrepresented or whatever, mm-hmm. and the seller did not inform you mm-hmm. that the engine is broken or whatever. But unless but there is this rule of as is, if you buy a car, it's as is.
That's not a law.
It's a law.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, if it's it doesn't matter if it's a law or just a convention. Yeah. So fine, if this is known to be the convention in this time, so okay.
Yeah.
But if that doesn't apply to these things,
unless you specifically ask him, if you don't,
you have to do your okay. For that, you have to do your due diligence. Ein lo alav onah achar kach. Then, if after such a thing, then it does not. That does not apply, right? Velo afilu taromes dvarim. You don't even have like a little bit of the beginning of a case against him, even if it's not a slam dunk. V'yeser pratel v'perek revii mitziah. It's found in the fourth parak of Maseches Bava Mitziah. But I guess b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zecharim u'nikevos. It applies to both males and females. Even though it says again isha sami so, it talks in the male, the masculine. It applies to both males and females. And if you overcharge or underpay more than a sixth on purpose, then you violated this prohibition. If it's less than a sixth, but you're allowed to charge more than a sixth extra in order to get a greater less than a sixth extra in order to get a greater profit. So this line in the Sefer Chinuch is very controversial. So this line is very controversial. The Ramban writes that in fact it's not permissible to charge any ona'a whatsoever, to deviate at all from the fair price for this object. It's only that if you went ahead and you violated that and you charged less than a sixth difference, then we would not cancel the transaction. We would not make you give back the difference in price. However, the Sefer HaChinuch and other Rishonim say that one is allowed, l'chatchila, to charge less than a sixth over the correct price. She'yimtzu b'nei adam tzarcheh muchanim b'chol makom. So we want to give the merchant a little bit more of a profit margin to make sure that the merchants are available to sell all the things that people need at all times, and they should be available. So therefore, Chazal, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, were lenient regarding a merchant that they should be able to charge a little extra. Okay, ve'ein lokin alav zeh, you don't receive the penalty of lashes for this, for violating this, levisha nitan lihi shavun, because you can give it back. It's a general principle that you don't get lashed for violating something that can return. Mitzvah Shin Lamed Ches, a related mitzvah, 338. Shelo lahonos echad mi Yisrael bedvarim. Not to do onoas dvarim, not to hurt people with words. Shelo lahonos echad mi Yisrael bedvarim. Not to hurt any Jewish person with words. Kilomar, shelo nomar li Yisrael dvarim shiach ivu vitzaru ve'ein bo koach lehi ozer mehem. We should not say anything to a fellow Jew, anything that will hurt or distress him or her, and the words don't have any constructive power. So that's what, Mrs. Hirsch, I think you were asking a couple weeks ago about what exactly the gether is. So obviously there are certain situations where you have to say something to someone else that's hurtful because it's going to hurt their feelings. You know, we have the mitzvah of tochacha, for example, that when another Jew is violating a sin, so you have to give rebuke under most circumstances.
If they'll listen.
And also for children, when you're raising children, obviously, if you weren't allowed to say anything that would hurt their feelings, you know, Mommy, I want 20 cookies. Well, how would you feel if I said no? I'd be very sad. Okay, here you go. Here are your 20 cookies. No, obviously, there is a limit to the prohibition. So it's not like you can never ever say anything that hurts someone else's feelings, but there has to be a constructive reason why you're saying it, and you are certainly not allowed to say anything that's just destructive and will just hurt their feelings for no productive reason.
How do you ever know?
The productive
will find offensive. I mean, one has to take into consideration also that knowledge of that person is important also, because there are different levels. People are subjective, how they perceive things, how they perceive criticism. Someone else might just slough it off and make nothing of it.
100%. But you have to err on the side of giving the tochacha, unless you're pretty confident. And if a person's not orthodox, so the person, you know, is totally not, so you're not going to give them tochacha. But if it's a firm person, it seems like a firm person, and you're not sure whether your tochacha is going to be effective, then you have to err on the side of giving the tochacha.
If you know someone who's, let's say, what we colloquially call a thick-skinned person, so you would use a rougher, a harsher means of admonishing them, mm-hmm. or criticizing them, that type of situation would be permissible, whereas if you knew that the person was a more sensitive one, you would not be allowed to use that type of
correct
approach.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good point. Yeah.
Go on and discuss this. Yeah. Also, the answer here really is not where, you know, it's a question of you're trying to do it for some better purpose, but not sure it's going to work. Is really here is saying you should not say something which, for no reason whatsoever,
right,
is hurtful. And saying, boy, you're really ugly or something.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's, you know, like, yeah.
Where did you get that skirt?
So, Kate's the imaya Baal Tshuva. So, Baal Tshuva in the olden days didn't mean exactly what it means today. You know, nowadays it means somebody who grew up institutionally, you know, not observant of Judaism. Here, everybody, in the olden days, you know, there's no such thing as organized, I mean, besides the Sadducees and those, movements, but there was no such thing as organized, not firm kind, just somebody who was lax in his religious observance, and then he decided to become pious again. So he said, if you're a Baal Tshuva, but obviously it applies to Baal Tshuva nowadays also. Lo yomar lo zichor ma'asecha harishonim. They remember what you used to do. You know, or there's, you're giving a shiur. I don't know, you're talking to someone. And you happen to mention, oh, the Torah says we're not allowed to eat lobster. Oh, hey, Fred. Hey, Fred, is it true that lobster is really delicious? And you say it in front of the whole audience. Okay. So you've had lobster. Yeah. You know, some people might not mind. Some people might say, you know, be proud of the fact, yes, lobster is my favorite food, but I gave it up for God. And, you know, very open about that. But for most people, they don't want to discuss, in
that's
also public.
Lashon Hara, before, in front of other people. So that's not
if everybody knows that the person is a Baal Tshuva, so that wouldn't necessarily be Lashon Hara, but still, it would be a Noz Dvarim, because it could very easily make a person feel bad. Hayu chalayim bain alav. Or you're at a table, you know, you're eating your, you make beef bacon or duck bacon, you say, hey, Fred, in front of your table, is this really comparable? Does this taste like, real bacon? Tell me.
Would it be okay if in the prior, it's just you and Fred having lunch together?
If you're close friends and you know that he's a Baal Tshuva and you know that he's eaten bacon and lobster before, and you ask him, you know, just in a
question.
Friendly way, you know, how do these things taste? You know, I'm really interested. So that would probably not be on Oz Dvarim. Yeah, it depends. It's very subjective.
You know his story already.
Yeah, it's very subjective. How you chalayim bayin alav? Let's say the person becomes ill. Lo yomar lo kiderech shamru chaver of Iov. You should not follow the example of the friends of Iov.
Oh,
remember, Iov had really bad things happen to him. His family died, and he got all these illnesses. So that his friends came and said to him, "Alo yirascha kislasecha, your reliance is on your piety." That's a Shaila. Toisus and Baba Metzia over there says exactly what this means. That it doesn't mean your folly is your piety, which it could mean. It means basically what they're trying to communicate is, oh, Eov, clearly you just weren't being firm enough. You were not connected enough to God. If you would only be a little bit more religious, you know, these things would not be happening to you.
You know, those firm women's magazines do that crap all the time.
Oh, yeah?
You know that? They do.
Okay. Okay. I'm not familiar with that. But again, if bad things are happening to someone, you should not attempt to find a reason. We do not, unless the person, you know, sometimes they want it. If somebody says to me, you know, hey, you're a rabbi, I had this medical issue and, you know, what's going on? And the rabbi says, you know, I'm not going to tell you exactly why. Obviously, no one can say that. But, you know, maybe it's a message that maybe you should try to be mechazik in your religious observance. So then that would be okay because that was invited. It's not going to hurt the person's feelings. But if again, you should not suggest reasoning for people's suffering. You just listen and you sympathize. So that is a typical Anoas Dvarim to do such a thing. It's like, again, I mentioned in my drasha a couple weeks ago about this video online, inappropriate things that people say at shivas.
Oh, God.
So that's not good. If we can very, very easily get to Anoas Dvarim, if you go to a shiva and say, you know...
Oy.
It's in a better place.
Oy vey. Yeah.
That's basically the same thing as far as I'm concerned. It's a better place. You know?
So. Yeah.
I've heard people say that.
Don't say things like that. Yeah, you can mean well, but it can still be Anoas Dvarim.
Better
not. It's not good. Do not say anything that, especially when people are at vulnerable times, that's even worse than Anoas Dvarim.
There's a phrase in English, you probably heard it, Job's comforter. Don't be a Job's comforter. It's a very negative thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Ra'a chamarim mivakshim tvua, another that noun pattern that we saw last time, chamar, occupational, somebody who's a donkey driver, so they're looking for feed for their animals, or maybe to sell, to load their animals with, produce. Lo yomar lahem l'chweitz aploni, v'hu yodea she'en lo. So you say, oh, great, you know, go to Harry. Harry has lots of grain to sell, and he'll be happy to help you. So they knock on, they go to Harry's apartment, they knock on the door, hey, I'm here to buy grain. What? I don't sell grain? What are you talking about?
It isn't exactly, you know, hurting someone's feeling. Basically, causing someone to go to trouble.
It's going to cause an awkward, embarrassing situation between two other people. So that's included in Anoas Dvarim, because it's going to hurt their feelings. Velo yomar latagar. You walk into a store and you say to the merchant, "Bechama chefetze." You inquire as to the price, and you don't really want to buy it.
It's famous
us. We do that a whole lot. Window shopping. Check it out on Macy's and then order it online.
Again, yeah. So I don't know if this applies in a large department store where the clerks are, they're not. Unless they work on commission, they're just there to help you, and they're the actual owner of the store is not there. And it's not going to hurt his feelings. But, yeah, in general, especially in a small store where maybe the owner is there and, it gets his hopes up every time you walk in, every time somebody inquires as to the price. Again, it's possible that you're not for sure going to buy the object, that you're considering whether to buy the object, and you say, well, if he tells me a really cheap price, I'm going to buy it. But if not, so I'm not going to buy it. That's okay. If, as long as you have, some sort of a constructive interest in inquiring as to the price, then that would be allowed.
But if you have your constructive thing is for your own sake, for example, you want to see how much money you're going to save when you buy it on Amazon or whatever.
Ooh,
that's not
good.
All right. So
that really is
Gnevus
Das,
though. Is that, yeah. Is that
that's
just sort of come under this, case? Or?
No, Gnevus Das.
Who's Das?
What?
You're Das, making the owner think you're going to buy
you're
something.
Basically, Amazon is charging. You're stealing somebody's,
If you go to a
Gnevus Das means you give a false impression. Right. So that, yeah. I mean, it could be very interrelated in certain situations, but it's not. They're not identical. They're not identical.
I've heard it described as Gnevus Das, the business of going into a store with absolutely no intention. You just want to scope it out before you buy it on Amazon.
It depends.
Stealing his knowledge of. First of all, you're raising his expectation.
So again, there could be situations that are under both, but there could be Gnevus Das without Anoas Dvarim, and there could be Anoas Dvarim without Gnevus Das. Yeah.
Okay. Well, basically, no, because if you're comparing price with Amazon, if he gives you a really cheap price, you're going to buy it anyway. So it's kind of like you're asking for the price, right? And okay, and maybe you're not going to buy now. Maybe you'll buy it later.
You go in there to go ahead and want to take a look at it. You want to pick it up. Decide whether you want to buy it. But basically, you know you're not going to buy it from this guy. You just want to basically take up his time in order, you take up his time so that you can actually take advantage of him having the store and the inventory when you have no intention of going and buying it from him.
That's how these people do work on commission. Go into a camera store. I mean, you know, and you take up half an hour of the guy's time, the clerk's time, but you just want to get his knowledge and
So that's why it says in the pasuk, "Veloso nu isha samiso, v'yareisa me'elokecha," and you have to fear God. Why does the pasuk add that you have to fear God? The answer is that, and a lot of times when you do something that's onaz dvarim, you could give an excuse. You could say, you go into the store, you ask for the price, and then you leave the store. So then when you get to Ad Me'av Esrim, so you're going to go to Shemayim, and God's going to say, hey, you did Onoaz Dvarim that time. You say, no, that wasn't Onoaz Dvarim. I was really thinking maybe I would buy it if he gave me a different price. So God's going to say, hey, dude, I know what you were thinking, and that was in fact Onoaz Dvarim. That's why it says v'yareisa me'elokecha, because there are certain situations where it depends on what's in your heart, whether it's onaz dvarim or not, and only God knows, only you and God know whether you actually intended it to be hurtful or whether you were really constructively inquiring as to the price of this object. Val zanemar v'lo sonu isha zami, so each person should not hurt each other. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua, the reasoning for this mitzvah is known. Kihu lasei shalom bein habrios, it's to make peace between people. V'godol ha-shalom shebo ha-bracha mitzuya ba'olam v'kosha ha-machlokes. Kama klolos v'kama katakolos tuyos bo. So if there's a lack of peace, and there's going to be strife, so many curses and many issues in society have to do with such things. Midine ha-mitzvah, what are the rules? Kama zharos v'chama zeruzin shi ziruna zichron al-vracha b'inyan zeh shalu achiv ha-brios b'shum dover v'lo levaisham. That the Chazal warned us many times and they encouraged us strongly not to do it. Because this is something that requires constant vigilance if you're really going to do it properly. Because it's possible to hurt someone's feelings if you don't, the lashon I used in my drasha, you don't halt kup. If you don't really pay attention to where the other person is coming from and what could hurt his or her feelings, then you could easily violate this prohibition. And not to embarrass, not to hurt. V'hi fligu b'dover ad sh'amru shelo yisla eino v'al ha-mekach b'sha she'ein lo damim. They said, even to the extent that you shouldn't even look at an object, you know, to look inquisitively at an object if you don't have the money to buy it at the time. The Roy.
Someone who goes into a store merely out of curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So, it's a good point. These are not discussed explicitly, all these new modern things, but one has to be very careful as to make sure that it doesn't hurt anyone's feelings or get people's hopes up improperly. The Roy Lizar Shafilu Beremez Dvarav Lo Yehe Nishma Cheruf Livne Adam. That even if people shouldn't misinterpret something you say in a manner, I was talking about this in my drasha, that you in a manner that is hurtful. Onaz dvarim is something that really hurts people. It really, really hurts people. So people a lot of times are more concerned about being hurt emotionally than being hurt financially. The sages tell us, "Gidola onaz dvarim onaz mamon." Hurting through words is even more severe than hurting through monetary means. It says, "You shall fear your God." Adds that on, it ends a certain severity. In addition to what I was saying before, that it emphasizes you're not allowed to do onaz dvarim, even if it could be interpreted as not onaz dvarim, because you and God know your intention.
Can I ask you a separate question? I don't know if it's appropriate in this situation, but let's say a situation happens that someone didn't intentionally say something to you which is hurtful, but it ended up being hurtful. And it was something so hurtful that you're unable to come to forgive the person who said that to you, even though that other person said it unintentionally. What sort of obligation do you have to forgive that person who said that unintentionally, even though it was terribly hurtful to you?
Would this person have been able to have any idea that it could be hurtful?
Let's say it was said totally innocently, without an intention of...
Well, again, there's certain things like... There's certain things you could be expected to know and certain things not expected to know. So let's say Let's say you had no idea someone was a Baal Tshuva. Let's say you knew someone. Wait, let's get back. Step back. Let's say you knew someone was a Baal Tshuva, and then you're talking to a group of five people, and this person is sitting right there, and you make a comment that could be interpreted as somewhat hurtful about Baalei Tshuva. So even though you're not, this person is just standing there on the side, you're supposed to keep in mind all the background of everyone in the group. And again, we're not talking about, obviously we should talk positively about all Jews, not talking about something that's intended to be hurtful, but some off-the-hand comment that could be interpreted by this person as being insulting towards his background. So that would be definitely a problem of Onos Dvarim, really Onos Dvarim, but and again, not intentional is not as bad as intentional, but that's still not good. But again, if somebody became a Baal Tshuva at age 4, and nobody had any idea that this person was a Baal Tshuva, and you make a comment, so how would you have any idea? You can't be expected to know that to be careful about your speech. Again, not there's anything absolute.
What kind of intention is
what I'm asking, like that. Actually, yeah. Is that you, as the one who was hurt...
So you're supposed to go to them. You're supposed to approach them.
Are you obligated to forgive that other person if you know that that other person said something unintentionally hurtful to you?
You're not obligated to forgive the person. Well, you are obligated without a proper apology, but in order you have to facilitate the person's apology. You have to go to the person who hurt you and say, you know, you said this. You know, you really had, you probably didn't know that this was really hurtful to me. But I'm telling you now that I was really hurt by what you said, and then hopefully the person will actively apologize, and then you'll be able to forgive the person.
And if that person then apologizes sincerely, are you obligated to accept the apology?
This is a Yom Kippur Dikashayla. This is a very, very, it's not so pushed exactly. Yeah, basically, yes. If the person apologizes sincerely and is absolutely, you know, you're convinced that the person is not going to intentionally repeat the offense, and there is absolutely nothing more that they could do to placate you, and they did the absolute best, then yes, you're basically obligated to forgive them. Yeah.
And if you feel that somebody said something which they couldn't possibly apologize for, you shouldn't even bother asking them to apologize. It's not going to do any good.
Right. There is, we say in Yom Kippur, in Tefillah Zakah, and everybody says it, but the Tefillah Zakah that some people say before Kol Nidre, that you forgive everyone who sinned against you, except for those who maliciously invented false stories about you and spread them to create a negative image of you. So for such things, the Chofetz Chaim says there might be even a midas chasidus, a pious practice to even forgive such a person. But the simple understanding of the halacha is that such something that is such an egregious transgression against, again, unless they did, they were really... tried as best they could to make it up to you, but if such something so egregious, so one really is not required to forgive them. Say, I'm not forgiving you, and let God take it out with you on this Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. Yeah, v'lo yeh be'efsher lichto. But if you don't go up to the person and they have no idea that they hurt you, and they would apologize if they did, then that's depriving them of an opportunity to do tshuva and to make up their relationship with you. V'lo yeh be'efsher lichto prat kol advarim sheish ben tzarei. Because Chazal obviously could not list every single case where there was an ostar. And v'kol echad tzarich lizar kefi mashiyira. You have to be as careful as you can not to hurt others. Ki Hashem Baruch Hu yodea kol psiosav v'chor mizosav. He knows everything you walk, literally, but and everything that you, every, you know, a gesture that you make. You can hurt someone even by making a gesture sometimes. Ki adam yira leinayim v'hu yira lelevav. So people see with their, through their eyes, and you see, God sees through people's hearts. There's a lot of cases in Chazal that they mention, tell you stories to give you strength and the rebuke about this matter of Ikar Enyam Perek Revi Metzias. In the middle, it's in the fourth Perek, Amazekh Zvav Metzia, Vilam Ritz Hashem, finish next week this mitzvah, very important mitzvah, Avonah Zvarim.
If somebody carries their glasses in